just hearing the first of Brahma's prayers. And in that prayer, Brahma described what he saw just before his eyes, the form of Krishna that was so beautiful. But also, based on what he had previously just seen, how that same innocent looking boy had just shown how he had expanded unlimited Vishnu forms from him, who were being worshipped by every living entity in the universe, and then they basically contracted back into this beautiful form of Krishna, who was just standing there with his dhoti that was sparkling like lightning, with a peacock feather upon his head, and his darkest skin that was the color of
a rain cloud
or a monsoon cloud. Yet, he was astounded how these two things could be simultaneously true. Unlimitedly powerful and so cute and innocent and sweet, just standing there with food in his left hand, with no shoes upon his soft lotus feet. Inconceivably powerful and so beautiful. So therefore he understood that so much about Krishna's form. Yes? No. He understood his realization in the second verse is that he understands nothing about Krishna's form. What is the limit? Because we were saying, we were suggesting that everyone imagine how beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful is. And in fact, unless one's own heart is unlimitedly beautiful, one cannot see unlimitedly beautiful, because we see with our own consciousness. So, same thing. Just imagine, use your imaginative powers, your speculative powers, to just think about, attempt to conceive of what unlimitedly powerful means. Because we can think of powerful, so like we look up at night and we see the universe. We don't see all the universe, but we see so many stars in the sky. And usually we just wander around in this bubble of our own mind. And we don't see anything except our own mind. And then every once in a while we look up at night and we see the stars. And we see so many stars and planets. And suddenly our consciousness expands. And we think, boy, we may think, I'm so tiny and insignificant. And there's so much more to reality than I'm aware of. So there must be a person who has created that too. All the planets that are in the sky, like practically like sand or something like that. There's so many of them. But that is not what unlimitedly powerful means either. He's not just the creator of this universe. Unlimitedly powerful. Unlimitedly. Unlimited universes come from the skin. From his skin when he breathes, and that's an expansion of an expansion of an expansion. Unlimited God comes from him. Vishnu forms. Unlimitedly powerful. Think of what that means. Of course, we cannot. And that was the conclusion of Brahma. This is inconceivable. Krishna is inconceivably powerful. And he speaks about that in the second verse, beginning with the word asyapi. Asyapi deva vapusho maranugrahasya svecha mayasya natubhuta mayasya kopi neshe mahitva vastum vanasantarena
Shad shad tavaiva kimutam masukanubute.
Everyone, sing it along.
Asya pideva vapuso matukahasya svecha mayasya natukutamayasya kopi neshe manitva vasutamasasarena shad shad tavaiva kimutatma sukanubute.
My dear Lord, Brahma says, he's described Krishna's beauty. Neither I nor anyone else, and he's the topmost, can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours. He's seeing before him unlimited beauty, but no one can estimate its potency, its power, which has shown such mercy to me, because Brahma stole away the boys and Krishna reciprocated by revealing his own identity, by showing unlimited Vishnu forms. He could have done anything. He could have struck him down. No, but look at Krishna's reciprocation. That was his mercy. And which appears, your transcendental body, which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? I can't, even though I'm completely renounced, because when people think of a spiritualist whose hope is to attain the highest position of realization, one thinks of a complete renunciant, one who leaves the world, he doesn't have anything to do with the world. Well, Lord Brahma has nothing to do with this material world. He's in perfect control of his mind. Now, if one knows the art of controlling one's mind, and so many spiritual practitioners, their whole spiritual life is simply based on this one principle, from yoga to so many of the Buddhist practicing Vipassana, and so many of the New Age-y type of things, they're using breath to control the mind. But Brahma is the master of that. And by using those type of methodologies, one can actually gain some very deep spiritual realizations that make the miserable material life that we, what we usually think of as reality, appear insignificant. One can actually see the oneness of everything, just, practically speaking, by controlling one's mind. And one could say that's a form of Brahman realization. But Brahma says, I can do all those things. I understand. Brahma means the greatest. But compared, whatever I am capable of understanding, comparing that to the potency of your transcendental body, the unlimited, inconceivable potency of your transcendental body, I am simply embarrassed. I cannot understand anything. That is Brahma's realization. He sees Krishna's beauty, and he has glimpsed Krishna's potency, and he understands, I cannot understand anything about your body. And if I can't understand your body, how powerful it is, how then can I understand the pastimes that you are performing with these cowherd boys and cows? Because they look so common. They look common. In every village of India, you can see cowherd boys wandering around with their sticks without shoes. But Krishna is doing this despite the fact that he's unlimitedly beautiful and unlimitedly powerful, inconceivably powerful. And he's doing this. So who can even imagine, Brahma says, Sukhana Bhute, the happiness that you're experiencing, because your body is composed of Satchidanandas, Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Adya Govinda Savakarana Karanam. I can't imagine the happiness that must be experienced by engaging in these pastimes with these bodies, by these special boys and cows, and wandering in Vrindavan with the decorations that you have freely chosen, although the jewels of Vaikuntha are available to you. You could be sitting on your throne. You are God. You could be sitting on your throne and having unlimited people worship you and offer you prayers. But usually what, if you go to the temples and churches, what the unlimited people do is say, oh, please help me, I have this problem and this problem and this problem, and help me with this and this and this. And then they, please. But no, Krishna could be doing anything, and this is what he's choosing to do. So how much pleasure he's getting from these pastimes with the cowherd boys and the cows and the other residents of Vrindavan in Sri Vrindavan Dham. No one, even the topmost intelligent greatest Brahma, can estimate these things. I'll read the verse in English another time, one more time. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me, and which appears just to fulfill the desire of your pure devotees. Very, 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 very secret and important point. Why does that independent person, all-powerful person, descend to this material world? Yeah, this is explained in Bhagavad Gita, but there are many, 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 very, very wonderful reasons, because it says Puritaranaya Sadhanam Vinyasaya Duskritam, but Krishna can vanquish the atheists with the blinking of his eye. And his devotees, the sadhus, sadhanam, a sadhu means one who is transcendental. What is the suffering of a sadhu? To be transcendental. And the answer is their suffering and separation from Krishna. And Krishna comes. And he takes a form. This is Krishna. He assumes a form that it perfectly reciprocates with their desires to love him. Not that he has no form and then he assumes a form. But he's exactly in reciprocation with his devotees' desire to love him. This is Krishna. Prabhupada said, what about our chanting? It should be like a baby crying. But the baby crying for mother sounds differently from the baby just crying and the mother taking the baby out. Baby protesting, that's the protest cry. No, I want to be in here and cry. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs. See how immediately the mind goes out the door? Yes? Does it? Because baby's crying is very powerful. But Brahma's mind was completely under his control. But still, despite that, he could not understand Krishna's personal form. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? So read first. There are comments by Sanatana Goswami and Srila Swami, but we won't read those here. But we'll read some of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment to this verse. Because Krishna was very, very cute and very playful. And there he is standing with his stick. What is the use of, what's the purpose of the stick? The calves, little stick, because the calves are just little. For herding the calves and his flute and his buffalo horn and the food in his left hand. And Krishna is offering Brahma's offering that first prayer to him, saying that you're so beautiful and everything. And Krishna could be saying, me? How could I be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I'm just a little coward boy. Why are you praising me in this way? So therefore, Brahma's reply is this prayer, actually.
that, oh, now I know something about who you are because I've seen the Vishnu forms expand from you. So he says, so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this could be Brahma's answer, response to the first prayer. You're just a coward. I'm just a coward boy. I don't know anything about these things. So Brahma says, no. Fearing such objections from Krishna, Brahma spoke this verse. Repenting for having offended Krishna due to his ignorance. I cannot estimate the greatness of your transcendental body engaging in childish play. What to speak of your pastimes of youth, Kaisur? If I cannot understand the potency of your transcendental body, then how could I possibly understand your happiness? The happiness you experienced within yourself when you heard the calves. I cannot comprehend the happiness of your coward boys. What to speak of the happiness you experienced by directly playing with them? If a person with a controlled mind cannot understand that happiness, what then can be said of those with an uncontrolled mind? Brahma continues. Brahma described Krishna's body in this way to prove that the Supreme Lord cannot be understood by yoga. He cannot be understood by austerity or even Shastric study. Krishna, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, is only understood by mercy. There is nothing on one level, there is nothing that we can do to understand Krishna. And Brahma, in the previous verse, we heard that he was reciting his prayers just to please Krishna. But ultimately, Krishna again is independent. No one can force him to do anything, even give his mercy. And our realizations in bhakti yoga are dependent on Krishna's mercy. So it is very important for one who wishes to advance in Krishna consciousness to understand the process of attaining mercy. Nothing, not by our great intelligence, not by our great strength and ability to perform austerities or yoga. We can understand so many things, but we cannot understand Krishna. Brahma continued, my Lord, although I offended you, due to your magnanimity, what does magnanimity mean? Generosity. Due to your openness of heart and kindness, you have shown such mercy to me. That mercy consists of revealing your sweet human form after showing your awesome Vishnu forms. They fill one with great fear and reverence. And then, to fulfill your desires, your transcendental body is the source of these Vasudev forms, these foreign forms that I've seen. Why does Krishna do what he does? He is just to fulfill his desires. He's independent. So he has his Vasudev forms, and their being there is to fulfill his desires. And though your body fulfills your desires, it is spiritual and not like our bodies, which are produced of matter. I cannot estimate the potency of your spiritual body, even though I have revealed the Vedas, even though I have studied the fruits of the Vedas, the fruit of the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam. I cannot even understand the greatness of your Vasudeva forms. What to speak of the greatness of the original source of those transcendental forms, the two-armed form of Govinda. Even though I've studied, even Bhagavatam, I cannot understand the limit of your power, the potency of this body that I see standing before me. In this topmost of transcendental
forms as an innocent coward boy. You intensely relish the pastimes of stealing butter. This is why we must... One time I was in Bangladesh, and there were some Christians. There were Hindus, actually, who converted to Christians. Because anyway, the whole system of doing this, if you want to know how to do it, I've studied it a little bit. But they won't convert the Muslims because they know what will happen if they try to do that. But Hindus are very, anyway, shanti, shanti. So this one very, it was a proud young man actually. He said, how can you worship a God who dances as God, someone who dances with the wives of others in the middle of night? No understanding of Krishna, of who Krishna is, of what it means to be God, of that Krishna's body is completely transcendental, inconceivably powerful. And you think that an inconceivably powerful Lord will engage in some activity that gives a mundane person, a materialistic, lusty person, pleasure? You don't think that God is beyond that? And there could be a deeper meaning to his activities than you can comprehend with your materialistic mind? I didn't say that, but because there's no use at that particular point. But so small-minded, if we hear the pastimes of Krishna from Canto 10, these childlike pastimes, without having an understanding of who Krishna is, they will clearly be misunderstood. Clearly be misunderstood. Because we will only see our own minds. When our mind is pure and filled with a special type of love, then we can see Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. When we get mercy, then we can understand Krishna's pastimes of Vrindavan. So Brahma's, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, comments, in this topmost of transcendental forms as an innocent coward boy that is inconceivably powerful and inconceivably unlimitedly beautiful, you intensely relish the pastimes of stealing butter. How could you worship a God who steals butter? Drinks the gopi's breast milk. How can you worship a God who drinks the gopi's breast, who tends the calves? In Australia, he would be on the dole. What would be the problem? But why does Krishna do these things? Brahma is saying, I cannot estimate what's going on here, actually. I cannot estimate or the ecstasy that the coward boys must be experiencing. I cannot estimate, therefore, what you must be experiencing. I cannot estimate the potency of your body. I cannot estimate the limits of your beauty. So that places Brahma in a position of humility. And that's what he's presenting to. I see you standing before me, but I cannot actually understand. But I know there is something wonderful, so wonderful. Because the unlimitedly powerful doesn't do anything mundane and foolish, influenced by ignorance. I cannot understand your playing of your flute and you're enjoying the childhood pastimes, which are extraordinary, even in comparison with the activities of your Vishnu expansion. Because our... devotees, our concept of God, who is God? What does he do? He's the creator of the universe. What does he do? What does he do before the universe is created? Just wait. How much more time is left before the creation? 15 seconds, 14 seconds. Oh. 13, 12, and then the universe is destroyed. Oh no, I have nothing to do for the next 50,000 millenniums. Oh, this job of God is really... And then as soon as I create the universe, everyone just complains to me and tells me their problems. It's actually a foolish conception of God. I once saw a cartoon. I still have it, where there's a picture of an old man with a beard, and he's sitting in front of course, what else, his computer screen, and he's got his finger just about to press the enter button on the keyboard. And on the screen is this poor fellow walking down the street, and he's walking in front of a building, and in front of the building is a big rope above his head, and hanging from the rope is a piano. And the man is walking beneath, and God's there with his finger on the enter button, just waiting to push. He's waiting for him to walk right beneath the piano. Is this God? This supreme controller? Is this what he does? Because it's such a childish conception of God in one sense, therefore people nowadays don't have an inclination to worship that kind of a God. But really speaking, if people will drop their prejudices and understand Krishna about God and what he does and who he is and where his interests lie, and that he's not just the supreme controller, he's the supreme lover of his devotees. And he reciprocates. And that is how he gets his pleasure. He gets his pleasure. Not by controlling everything and making us all go before him fearfully like this. Please don't press the button when I'm walking below the piano. No, his pleasure is pleasing his devotees. That's his pleasure. This is the pleasure of God. And this is how all the whole spiritual world and the whole, say the spiritual world at this moment, is set up as a transcendental competition between God, Krishna, and the devotees. Who can give each other more pleasure? This is the spiritual world, because the devotees, their only desire is to make Krishna happy. They have placed Krishna firmly in the center of their hearts. And Krishna's only desire is to make the devotees happy. This is the spiritual world. Exactly the opposite of the material world. At least the dealings between the individuals of the material world, conditioned souls. So, Brahma says, I cannot understand you, Krishna, even though I'm the greatest of all of the intellectuals. So, how is Krishna understood? The next verse, Brahma says, will explain that. Yes. This verse is a very important verse. It's actually very simple how to understand Krishna. It's by hearing about him. Because by hearing about Krishna, the desires... Just like if we hear, I once had, in 1996, I remember very well, I got the exact computer that I wanted. Because up to that time, the computers were very, very big, and then finally they were getting smaller, but they had black and white LCD screens, and then so anyway, I got the exact computer I wanted. And I was staying with a devotee friend, and he had the exact same computer as me, except that his computer had a CD-ROM, and he was playing Prabhupada's bhajans in his computer, and mine didn't have that. And although I was completely satisfied, Suddenly, I was completely dissatisfied, and I hated my computer, and I had to do it, and eventually, even though I was trying to push these desires away, eventually I did get one. Because that's the nature of the material world. Because when you see something or hear about something in the material world, the desires come to the heart. And when they are planted in the heart in that way through hearing, then, practically speaking, you have to satisfy those desires. So in a similar way, if we will just hear about Krishna and allow the desire to love Krishna and serve Him with great devotion to blossom in our heart, then we will get that. We will get that. It is just a matter of time. That's what Brahma is telling us. Give up. And look at this verse, the verse that he actually says. It's a very important verse, because when Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were speaking, Mahaprabhu was asking Ramananda Roy, please tell me the best of things, the best of things. And Ramananda Roy would answer, and Mahaprabhu would say, no, Yambhaya, this is external. Tell me something more. This is external, one thing after another. Even Sarvadaman Pratyaja, he said this is external, giving up Vanashrama. But when he came, when Ramananda Roy said this verse, Mahaprabhu said, yes, this is bhakti. Brahma's prayer. Jnane prayasam udapasya namante eva jivanti san mukritam bhavadi vartam stane stita sutagatim tanuvan manobir ye priyaso ajita jito prasitas trilokyam. Everyone. Yani prayasam urupasya namanteva jivanti sambhukritam avadiya vartam stane stita sutagatyam tanavam manovir ye prayaso anita hitopya sitas trilokyam. Now, udupasya, yani prayasam. Jnane means for knowledge. Prayasam, the endeavor for knowledge. Udopasya, giving up. Give up the endeavor to attain Krishna. And this doesn't mean that we shouldn't hear Shastra and study Shastra. But not for the process of knowledge. This is different. Because obviously we would never be hearing what Brahma said, if it wasn't for this type of transcendental knowledge. Knowledge about Krishna is different. But give up the endeavor to attain knowledge. Because bhakti really means, and what we hear about, is the endeavor, the process of getting mercy to please Krishna. That is not the process of knowledge. It's the process, the process of learning how the methodology, the means to please Krishna. So jnane prayasam, giving up completely, udopasya, this process of knowledge. Namante eva, and offering obeisances. Those who, go to the verse directly, the translation. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, they throw away the process of speculative knowledge, and with their body, mind, and words, that's tanuvan manobir, tanvan and mano. With their body, mind, and words, they offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, to hearing about Krishna, which are vibrated by you personally, by Krishna himself. There are two types of Krishna Katha, those spoken by Krishna himself, such as Bhagavad Gita, and those spoken about Krishna. And by the pure devotees, spoken about Krishna, they certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. This is the process. Even if one stays, or the recommendation, to stay wherever one is, don't make these external changes so strongly. But throw away the ascending process of attaining knowledge and become devoted to hearing about Krishna and acting upon what you hear. And such souls conquer, who do this, who become dedicated to the narrations of the Lord, they conquer your lordship, who is otherwise unconquerable because he's inconceivably powerful. No one in the three worlds or anywhere can conquer Krishna, but he becomes conquered by the devotion, awakening in the heart of a devotee who becomes devoted to hearing about Krishna. And this is what the temples are meant for. This is what it means to be a devotee. The temples are meant to facilitate the hearing and chanting process, the distribution of hearing and chanting about Krishna, and give the conditioned souls an opportunity to gain this taste. And by this taste, by this bhakti, Krishna himself is conquered. We'll hear some short comments on this. One by Srila Sridhar Swami. Because from the last verse, we've heard that now Krishna is inconceivably powerful. Even Brahma, the most intelligent person, could not understand him. So then Sridhar Swami says, then how can those who are in ignorance, who don't know Krishna, how can they cross beyond material existence? In reply, as is spoken this verse, beginning Jnani. Udapasya means not engaging even a little bit in what? In the process of speculative knowledge of jnana. These topics connected with you, which are enunciated by the saintly personalities, the topics, although being eternal, they are manifest by the sadhus. Remaining in their own positions, simply by being in the presence of saints, automatically these topics are received through the ear, orally, shrutigatam. And those who are thus offering respects with their body, words, and minds, they simply live. Even if they do nothing else, even if all they're doing is remaining alive, and they hear about Krishna from sadhus, by them you are conquered, you are attained, even though you are for the most part unconquerable by all others throughout the three worlds. What then is the use of laboring for knowledge? The process of knowledge, complete renunciation, living in the forest, performing meditation. No. Give that up and just hear about Krishna. Hear the pastimes of Krishna in the association of devotees. That was the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami. Srila Sanatana Goswami will read a small part of his comment and then we'll read the comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. The Sanmukharitam, can you see that in the verse? Where is that?
Second line.
Jivanti Sanmukharitam Bhavadhir Vartam. Saintly personalities, for the purpose of avoiding false speech and the agitation of all their senses, for the most part, they are prone to silence. They are prone to silence and living alone. But these persons, Sanatana Goswami, even these persons are made talkative by such topics of you or your devotees. And who is an example of that? Yes, Sukadev Goswami. He wouldn't talk to anyone. He wandered around unclothed, a 16-year-old boy, unclothed, not being in anyone's association. He would go to the home of a householder for 2 minutes, as long as it takes to milk a cow, and then he would go. But when Maharaj Prickett was leaving this world, he was asking the question, what should I do with the remaining 7 days of my life? And there were many, many, many sages who had gathered there, and they all disagreed with each other. Typical. One said, do this. Another one said, do that. You should perform this. You should do that. And then when Sukadev Goswami came walking up, everyone became silent, and everyone offered him the most revered seat of the speaker. And his answer was that you hear about Krishna, you hear about Krishna, you remember Krishna. And then he spoke and spoke and spoke for 7 days and seven nights about Krishna, until it was the time, practically speaking, for Maharaj Prickett to leave this world. So someone who never spoke at all, who remained within his, he was already realized in Brahman. He remained within his mother's womb for 16 years, and he refused to come out because he didn't want to get entangled. Even though his father was Vyasadeva, he refused to come out because he didn't want to get entangled in materialistic activities. He wouldn't come out. Even his father assured him, you come out, I promise you, there'll be no materialistic activities, no material, and he wouldn't come out. He said, I'll only come out if Krishna himself comes and promises me. Srila Vyasadeva went to Dwarka and brought Krishna, and Krishna promised him, Maya won't touch you. So he came out, and then he left home immediately. And his father wanted to teach him the Bhagavatam. And he was calling him, my son, come back, come back. And Sukadev Goswami had no desire to come back, even though his father was Vyas. And all the Bhagavatam describes, all that Vyasadeva heard was the echo of his words in reply. But then he sent out some of his students with verses from the Bhagavatam. That describe ho pakeham stana kalakutam jikamsya yadyapi svadvi vegetim datrichitam tatonyam kamvadayalam sharana. Who can find a more wonderful, merciful person than Krishna? When Putana came and tried to kill him, he awarded her the position of datri, of nurse, in the spiritual world. Kamvadayalum, who is more merciful than Krishna? And when he heard the description of Krishna's beauty, Baharpitam, Natavaravapa, which is as Krishna entered the forest, Sukadev Goswami, although he was on the Brahman platform, when he heard the disciples saying these Bhagavatam verses, he turned around and came back because he wanted to hear about Krishna. Someone who had not the slightest desire to vibrate sounds on the material level was completely captivated by the descriptions of Krishna. So therefore Sanatana Goswami says this. They are made talkative by such topics of you or your devotees, because there's such potency in Krishna Katha. That was a little part of Sanatana Goswami's comment. And then we'll just read this one, Chakravarti's comment. It isn't long. The Svetasvatara Upanishad states, Tameva Viditva, freedom is possible by understanding, only by understanding Brahman. If that is the case, this is called Purvapaksha. He's presenting an opposing argument. If that is the case, then how can an ignorant person attain liberation? This verse answers the question. Brahma said, your devotees give up all endeavors for knowledge, prayasam udapasya. They simply spend their time hearing your glories, bhavadiya vartan, spoken by you and your pure devotee, San Mukharitam. Staying in their social positions, sthinesthita, they do not travel around to holy tirthas for the purpose of taking a bath, etc. Without doing anything else, devotees pass their lives hearing topics, shrutigatam, about your name, your qualities and pastimes, and they offer all respects to these narrations with their bodies, their minds, and their words. They use their intelligence to grasp the meaning of the subjects that they hear. In this way, the pure devotees conquer you, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. You are not conquered by those who attain liberation through jnana. Indeed, to attain liberation from the cycle of repeated birth and death, merely about by hearing about you, is astonishing. This is the comment of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Now, in the Bhaktivedanta purports, there's something I'd like to read, because it says Tanovan Manobir. Sanatana Goswami, quoting from Sanatana Goswami, by the body, words, and mind. Tanu, body, words, van, and mind, mano. Can be understood in three ways. What one can do with the mind, body, and words. And this will be the last thing we'll read for this class. In reference to devotees, through their bodies, words, and minds, they are able to conquer Lord Krishna. They become perfect in Krishna consciousness. They can touch his lotus feet with their hands. Can we do that? Yes. Touch the deity's lotus feet. In fact, in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this is an item of devotion. They can call him to come with their words. Please come and take prasadam. One time, Prabhupada was asked, one of the devotees wanted some mantras to call Krishna to take rest and everything like that. And Prabhupada replied just by saying, he asked for the, you could tell that he wanted some very esoteric Sanskrit mantras, and Prabhupada replied by saying, my dear Lord, you should say, my dear Lord, please, your bed is ready, please come and take rest now. Something that was so full of devotion. Because it is the devotion that makes Krishna want to eat. It is the devotion that makes Krishna so hungry that he'll even eat the banana peels that Vidura's wife gave him. It is the devotion. So the devotees can conquer Krishna by their devotion and their words. They can touch his lotus feet, they can call him to come with their words, and they can attain his direct audience within their mind simply by thinking about him. So that's one meaning of Tanuvan Manobir, how the devotees conquer Krishna. In the case of non-devotees, the translation will be different. Instead of it, Tanuvan Manobir, referring to Jita, who is conquered, it would be referred to Ajita, unconquerable. So for non-devotees, he explains, those words, Tanuvan Manobir, means he is unconquerable by their minds, unconquerable by their words and by their bodies. The scientists will take their huge subatomic particle smashers and spin them around, the cyclotrons, etc., and spin the particles around. Look what they're trying to do. It's so demonic. They get these little gluons or whatever, and they spin them and make them go faster, just by some magnets. Faster and faster and faster, taking your billions of dollars. And then they get this other subparticle there, and then go, smash it into it. It's gross. And they're trying to see what that's composed of. And what's inside, really, ultimately.
inside every atom. It's Krishna. And he's not going to let them do that, you know.
Krishna, forearm form of Krishna? What are they?
No, because by devotion. But it's so gross by their acts, by their intelligence. They'll never, never see it like that because they don't have the proper mind. They only see gross matter because they are materialists. That's all they want to see. But a devotee, wherever he looks, he sees Krishna because he's a devotee. And a materialist, wherever he looks, he sees matter because he's a materialist, he sees matter. So the non-devotees, they are not engaged in the loving service of Krishna. They cannot conquer the absolute truth by their bodily strength, by their verbal expertise, or by their mental power. Despite all their endeavors, the ultimate truth remains beyond their reach. They cannot see anything, practically speaking. They can't see. In the room I'm staying in, the Mataji has one picture of she's an osteopath, and she has a picture of the human body with its skin taken off. Now, usually, you know, we think, oh, this person's very beautiful. But just imagine if they had their skin taken off, how they would look. Not very beautiful, but all the muscles, right? And all the muscles, and there's so many muscles. And they're put together, the shoulder, the leg, the stomach. They're put together in such an intricate way. You'd have to say, this is impossible to happen by chance or anything like that. So when a devotee even sees this, or a person even with a little devotion, they see Krishna's hand. They see Krishna. It's impossible otherwise. But a non-devotee sees only muscles. Just sees muscles and thinks, who knows? But they don't see Krishna. They think, oh, this has happened by the gradual. But it's impossible. It's impossible. Or imagine if they tried to organize their paychecks by the same process that they think that the universe is organized with. You think they would allow that, or they apply their intelligence to making sure that they get the paycheck on time? Nothing intricate happens by chance. And no one leaves it to happen by chance. And the same people will say, oh, yes. So they cannot see Krishna. Why? Because Krishna does not allow them to see him. But for the devotee, he can't keep away from the devotee. He was missing the cowherd boys. Some have taken it. He was missing them because they loved him so much and he loved them so much. He could not keep away from them. They could not keep away from him. All night long, the cowherd boys would be coming to Nandagram. Krishna, it's night time. They just left Krishna a half hour ago. Krishna, it's time to wake up now. Time to wake up. Come, it's time to herd the cows. And Mabiya says, go home. It's still 5 hours from sunrise. Go home now. Go to sleep. Let Krishna sleep. Yes, mother. Another half hour. Krishna, it's time to go now. Let's go. Because not for a moment they could think of being without Krishna, because Krishna was everything for them. And because Krishna was everything for them, they were everything for Krishna. And they couldn't see anything but Krishna. And he couldn't see anything but his devotees. This is wonderful. This is the process of bhakti. So there was the devotees and the non-devotees, second meaning of this Kanvana, Manobhya. And the third meaning is how Krishna is conquered. Yes. The pure devotees of the Lord, they conquer his body. They conquer Krishna's body. They conquer Krishna's words. So the first meaning, the devotees are conquered. They conquer Krishna. Second meaning, the non-devotees are conquered. They cannot conquer Krishna. Krishna remains unconquerable. And for the third meaning, it is Krishna who is conquered.
by the Krishna's body is conquered because he always remains by the side of his pure devotee. Lord Krishna's words are conquered because he always chants the glories of his devotees. And Lord Krishna's mind is conquered because he always thinks about his loving devotees. And how to use the mantra, Vishwanath Chakravarti offering obeisances. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the devotees can take full advantage of the transcendental topics of the Lord by offering all respects to those topics with their bodies, mind, and words. One should engage his body by touching the ground with his hands and head while offering obeisances to the topics of the Lord. Someone once said to Prabhupada, Dandavat Pranam. And Prabhupada said, they say Dandavat Pranam, but they don't even offer obeisances. It should be proper. And so the body should be offering obeisances to the topics of the Lord. One should engage his words by praising transcendental literature such as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as the devotees who are preaching such literature. And one should engage his mind by feeling great reverence and pleasure while hearing the transcendental topics of the Lord. In this way, a sincere devotee who has acquired even a small amount of transcendental knowledge about Lord Krishna can conquer him and thus go back home, back to Godhead, for eternal life at the Lord's side. So, yes, there's a question for you. What? Oh, I've gone one too many. Whoops. Go back. Oops. Oh. Okay. This thing is sort of cooperative some of the time. What point struck you most deeply from today's class? Think. And as soon as you have the point that struck you most deeply, if any, raise your hand.
Well, I have a question.
Wait. First, I have a question. Yes?
That it's 100 times more difficult to serve the mind than it is to serve Krishna.
Thank you. Yes?
You can know Krishna from hearing.
Yes, thank you. Yes?
That God is someone who has food in his left hand and has a stick on his right hand and has a flute tucked in his belt running around barefoot to his devotees.
Yes, that's the supreme understanding of the Supreme Lord. Thank you. Yes?
Krishna is independent.
Yes.
And only by his mercy can you understand him.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Krishna is simple to understand for simple people.
Yes. And he's complicated to understand for me. Yes.
Even though Krishna is all-knowing, he's still astonished at his own Lila Shakti.
Yes, quite astonishing. Yes. Anyone else? Yes.
It is easier to worship Krishna directly rather than indirectly.
Yes. Yes. Worshipping him through the material energy. Mataji.
The purpose of human life is to develop devotion to the Lord.
Yes. Thank you. What else? What else should we do with our lives? What else will we gain that's worthy of being gained?
To hear about Krishna.
Yeah, it's good to hear about Krishna. Yes.
Even though Krishna is inconceivably powerful, like he can have the most precious jewels of Vaikuntha, he still prefers to wear the simple Gunja earrings and Gunja necklaces of Goloka Vrindavan.
Yes. Yes.
Their only desire should be to hear Krishna's pastimes, but desire to hear them and not.
Yes. Yeah, gain understanding, the deeper, and of course the intelligence, remember that part also, the intelligence should be engaged in trying to understand Krishna Katha and the deep meanings of everything that they say, because Krishna's words are very deep, and of course naturally service. Yes, Prabhu.
Krishna just wants to please his devotees, and devotees just wants to please Krishna. That's what the spiritual world is made of.
Yes, and the material world is simply selfish. And no one is happy. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Yes.
That we can only get somewhere in our spiritual world by mercy.
Yes. But there's one other point that comes out in the Damodar Leela. When Mother Yasoda was trying to tie Krishna up, how short was it always? And one is mercy, and the other is?
Endeavor.
Yes, endeavor, our endeavor. Yes. Yes. Serve Krishna Katha. That means also giving it to others. Yes.
Krishna can be conquered by love and devotion.
Yes. Only. Anyone else? Yes. Yes. We can't avoid serving Krishna because he's the absolute truth. We cannot escape. Okay. Thank you. And yes. Tomorrow, who will read this one?
Thus Brahma has described Krishna. Tomorrow we shall begin hearing instructive words from Krishna's lotus.
So we've heard about who Krishna is, and that we should hear about him and hear his words. So tomorrow we shall hear his words. Yes. Yes. Questions? You had a question, Prabhu?
So in the prayers, we saw three prayers. First, Brahma is saying that praising the body of Krishna, and then he is saying his body is inconceivable.
Praising the beauty, of, beauty describing of the beauty of Krishna. Yes.
And then he is saying his body is inconceivable.
Inconceivably powerful.
Powerful. And now in third verse, he is saying that with speculation, nobody can conquer you, but just by hearing about you, one can conquer you. So why is he thinking like that? Is it because he tried to conquer him by, you know, stealing the or tried to thought of, you know,
he understand was, Krishna by he was trying to demonstrate the process of understanding Krishna through his own realization. His own realization was that Krishna is inconceivably powerful. That was his and inconceivably beautiful, but specifically inconceivably powerful, because he saw that so many coward boys were all Vishnu forms, and they were all coming from Krishna. The worshipable objects of the entirety of the universe was all coming from Krishna, of every universe. So he saw that he had no ability to understand how powerful Krishna actually was. Originally, he had taken the boys in calves to see what Krishna would do. He wanted to test and see how powerful Krishna was. So his conclusion was Krishna was unlimitedly powerful, and the only way he could understand something about Krishna, or what to speak of conquer him, was to hear about him from the pure souls who Krishna is reciprocating with. Is that? Yes, because he did want to test and see what Krishna would do. He wanted to see Krishna's power. So he took away the calves and the boys. Yes? And his conclusion, no, that system won't work. I will never be able to understand. Even by studying the Bhagavatam, in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said, no one can understand me. Even the great sages can't understand me. No one can actually understand Krishna fully. No one. But by hearing about Krishna, that one who is inconceivably powerful becomes so conquered that when The gopis tease Krishna as a little baby. And Krishna begins to cry. Mother Yasoda ties him up. He's conquered. Inconceivably powerful becomes conquered by devotion. That's the point. Is that all right? Or do you want to ask more?
Just by hearing how he gets conquered.
Because devotion comes to the heart. By hearing from those who have devotion, the devotion comes to our heart. And by hearing these topics, we become more attracted to Krishna. And we give up our false sense of being the Supreme Lord and develop the sense of being devotees by the process of hearing. And not that we only hear, but then naturally we want to serve with devotion. By hearing, devotion comes. Shinvatam svakata krishna punya shravana kirtanam vidyantastoya badari vidunoti sarakshita. Devotion comes by hearing about Krishna, by all the processes of devotion, shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam. But without hearing, nothing happens. Without hearing from devotees, nothing happens. So we want to associate with devotees. For what purpose? To hear about Krishna. Clear or more? Yes. Yes. There's a different type of process. Ascending knowledge, or what Prabhupada always calls speculative knowledge, which means using your own intelligence to understand the absolute truth, using your own ability. So the scientists use this process to use their own intelligence, and also the jnana yogis use this process of discrimination, also described in Kapila Muni's, what's it, chapter 26 of the third canto? Sankhya, yes. But these processes only allow us to understand the material world to some degree, and they only allow us to understand Krishna to some degree. And the ultimate understanding of Krishna through the ascending processes is to understand Krishna's qualityless feature as Brahman. But the process of bhakti is different. It's not ascending. The process of hearing about Krishna, it's the potent process of hearing about Krishna from Krishna or those who know him, such as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada. And by hearing Sanatana Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sutta Goswami, by hearing from them or from Krishna himself, it is realized knowledge about Krishna directly. Just an example is, like, say, today we're going to have some rice, perhaps. Now, what can you tell about the rice by studying the rice? You can understand its color, you can understand that something about the taste, you can understand, you can examine it in great detail and understand how many atoms are in a grain of rice even, how many cells or whatever. But to understand about the person who grew that rice, you have to get it from a different process, by a descending process. When someone comes and says, well, I know who grew that rice. It was that basmati rice was grown in the part of Pakistan. I know that particular farmer, and he's like this, and his family is like this, and he has three children. You have to hear it from someone. That's the process of bhakti. The other process is the ascending process, when you're studying the rice as an object. But that can't let you know the personality of the person who grew it. We can't understand Krishna's personality by studying the material world through an ascending process. And then we'll conclude, oh, it's an independent object. But it's not, obviously. The rice, a person grew the rice. Otherwise it wouldn't be here. So similarly, the material world has a person behind it, has intelligence behind it. But we can't know that person who possesses that power, that intelligence, unless we hear from him or his devotees. That's yes.
In your lecture you were saying that Brahma is the creator of the universe. So how did he become the creator of the universe without understanding Krishna and God? He tried to test Krishna, after going to that position, he again tried to test Krishna.
Yes, so your question I understand is that first I thought you were saying how did he become the creator of the universe, but then the question turned into after knowing Krishna as being a secondary creator of the universe, Brahma, and after knowing Krishna as the primary creator, how did he become an illusion?
Yes. And try to test Krishna by
yes. So the first question is how did Lord Brahma become the creator? We'll make it into three questions. The second question, how did he find out about Krishna? And the third question is how did he fall in illusion? So the first question is how do you become a prime minister? Is you have to get appointed. And why does one person get chosen to be appointed is because you have a special qualification. So Brahma has a great amount of piety, an unlimited amount of piety, but also has a desire to control and create. He's a great devotee, but he gets appointed due to his piety and desires. Then, how does he learn about Krishna? This is described in the second and third cantos of the Bhagavatam. Especially the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Second and third cantos describe how he performs austerities for many years and he actually sees Krishna, and by seeing Krishna he gets the potency to create. And the third question, how does he fall into illusion again? If you examine your own consciousness, or at least if I examine my consciousness, I can understand the answer to that question. And what's the answer to that question? Wait, so raise your hand, because everyone just raise your hand. How does someone who has knowledge fall into illusion again about his master? About who is the master? Yes?
I imagine that it would be part of Krishna's leader.
Okay, that's the ultimate answer. This is Krishna's Leela, but a less ultimate, more instructive answer. Yes. Oh. Huh? Yes, whenever one has a big position, there's always a tendency to forget how you got the position. And my favorite story of this is a little bit of an embarrassing story, but it's my own, is that one time when I went to Hong Kong with Jagatini Mataji, we were visiting, and Giridhari Swami picked us up at the airport. Do you remember? In a stretch limousine. Do you remember that time? Okay. It's true. A big stretch limousine, you know the kind? You've seen them. Do they have those in Melbourne, yes? Yeah, a big stretch limousine. And always the windows are? Dark, because it would be no fun if people, because it's better, oh, who's in there? He must be so important. If you can see the person is in there with, two eyes, two ears, there wouldn't be anything exciting. So you have to have the windows darkened. So everyone say, oh, I wonder who's in there. So he picked us up in a stretch limousine. There's, Bruce are carrying his luggage, traveling economy, squaws in there, leg training there. And we get off, and then he said that, it wasn't very much more expensive than a taxi, so he thought he would do it. So then, for that time, it was 20 minutes to the temple on Chatham Road, in Tsui East, I immediately became very proud. It was quite astounding. I immediately started thinking, I'm in a stretch of the machine, I must be very important. And then that wonderful time came, and no one could see who was in there because the windows were dark. That wonderful time came when we stopped on Chatham Road, and the door opened. And who walked out of the stress limousine, that important person? It was me. And then I had to carry my luggage up the stairs and everything like that, back into an ordinary. That was the reality. But there's a tendency, whenever we're in a situation, to become proud and forget that we are just insignificant servants of Krishna, and whatever we have is by mercy and grace. If something happens to happen properly, it's just Krishna's mercy. As Prabhupada once told me, the intoxication of Maya is very strong. And Krishna will test us again and again and again and again to see if we want to exploit for ourselves, if we still have that tendency to become proud and think that I am the one who's done this wonderful thing. Krishna will never reveal to us the most intimate pastimes because we will misuse them. In fact, he can't. We can't be there. We can't be in Vrindavan until these tendencies of wanting to exploit the material energy become overcome. So that was the answer to the third question. There's always a tendency for the conditioned soul to become proud. As long as there is a touch of Maya, there's that tendency.
But actually Lord Brahma was a great devotee. That's why he got a position.
Then it's Leela. But even a great devotee, unless he's on the highest of highest platforms, which Brahma was, can have trouble. If you start thinking, yes, I've done something wonderful. Yes, it is me. Yes. And everyone says, oh, you've done so, you've given such a nice class. As soon as you say, yes, you are correct. This is the great danger of being a devotee. You forget that you're just simply a servant. And when you have someone like Prabhupada, who was so trustworthy, that Krishna deemed so trustworthy that he wouldn't do that, therefore he could give them this incredible service of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And Prabhupada wouldn't leave the position of being a servant of his Guru Maharaj and of Mahaprabhu with Krishna. So there's a limit to what we can do as long as we have false ego, because we will do what Krishna allows us to do, what Krishna empowers us to do. That's all we can do. So there's a limit if we have false ego. He won't give us too much, otherwise we'll get into trouble. And if he ends up giving us a lot of service, then we have to be especially, especially, especially careful to never ever think that yes, it is me. Therefore, sometimes the devotees, out of their affection and appreciation, sometimes after a class they'll say, Jai, well, this Prabhu ki Jai. But no, even though it's a peculiar thing, on one hand, it's the devotee's duty to appreciate, but on the other hand, it's like poison for a person like me. Because I have that tendency to think, yes. So therefore, we personally do not allow such things. Because it's better to say, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Because then we can be united in that way. And appreciate someone who really did something wonderful. And you know, he really did something wonderful. And by his mercy, you know, we're sitting here. So that we can be happy, all of us saying. So let us say it and end the class. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. And now anyone would like a little homeopathic Yamuna water. One drop. Oh! Oh, actually, I have it in homeopathic dossier. Where's my bag? Yeah. Here, you could be more liberal in the stupid. It's homeopathic dosage. I put some drops in. If you stand over there,
yeah.
And here's, you know, the Priya Prabhu is distributing.